As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Alexander-Arnold, lovely shape on that!
Hello, welcome to the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast. We love football, we love tactics, and we like numbers, particularly in relation to football. We've taken those interests all over the place across the season so far, just a few weeks left, and we've got another really exciting episode for you today. I've got Michael Cox with me. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Ali.
Mark Carey's back in the building. You all right, Mark?
Hi, Ali. Yeah, good to see you.
And the returning Duncan Alexander.
Hello, Ali. Yeah, good. Back second week in a row. Very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised, you know, because we've got such a strong squad, such a strong roster, and it's not often that someone makes their debut and instantly becomes quite a key part of the squad. I sort of think he maybe Adrian Mutu when he burst onto the scene initially, and I think the chance is there for a similar flame out as well.
That's one theory, yeah. But yeah, more importantly, Liam has been over in Milan watching quite a big game. So that's I'm happy to fill in for Liam.
Yeah, we're not going to focus in depth on the Champions League semi-final first legs, but they did take place over the last 48 hours or so. Guys, how did you enjoy Real Madrid 1, Man City 1, Inter 2, AC Milan 0?
Yeah, two really good games, two completely different games. Real against City I thought was interesting because it was one of those games that was genuinely tactically intriguing without anything happening. I think sometimes tactically intriguing is just a synonym for, yeah, this game was a bit rubbish, but that wasn't a rubbish game. And yet there were no real chances. I mean, there was two goals, but I don't think there was a clear cut chance in the game, but it was so many interesting things happening.
So what had you sitting there stroking your chin? Genuinely, this is intriguing me.
Well, I thought the way that City played, I thought was incredibly cautious. I didn't think it was a thrilling way to play, but I thought it was interesting that, I mean, the wide players just didn't really attempt to dribble. They always just come inside and passing. I thought the way that they formed the box in midfield was interesting because Real had to adjust and almost formed a box of their own with Benzema dropping in. And then in a way, Real kind of took inspiration from City in the second half with Camavinga, who obviously is a central midfielder playing at left back, ended up pushing forward from left back to central midfield, which is the kind of thing that has become quite common these days and maybe something we'll speak about later today.
And in the other game, Milan derby, Inter 2-0 winners. I mean, they're fourth and fifth in Serie A, these two teams, 2 points between them. Inter, the one that came into that game on form and have ended up winning the first leg 2-0, which is a very strong scoreline to take back to the same stadium next week.
Yeah, obviously went ahead through a set piece, a bit of a goal out of nothing. And then I thought the second was a lovely goal in the sense that it was one of the goals you can score if you play a 3-5-2. The two strikers occupy the centre-backs, they take them away. And if you've got a midfielder who can burst into the space, they can, you know, completely pop up unannounced. I thought after that, really, Milan just looked a bit shell-shocked and struggled to play their way into the game. But yeah, two really different games, but I thought they're both pretty enjoyable to watch.
I mean, yeah, for as good as Inter were, I thought Milan were just terrible, especially within that first half an hour. And I looked at the numbers on it, and I think after an hour, Inter had taken 10 or 11 shots. I think it was 11, which was as many as they'd taken in each of the two legs against Benfica. It showed just how easy Inter had it. They didn't even have to try that hard to even get into the final third. So as strong as Inter were tactically, I thought that Milan were just well off the pace, and it might be too much already.
I'm absolutely sure that we will have further Champions League coverage over the next few weeks as the semi-final second legs take place and the final approaches. As for our pod topic today, well, it's a great week, in my opinion, because it's lovely when we have our own ideas and we execute them on the pod. It's brilliant when we get great ideas sent in from you guys, the listeners, as well. And the dream really is what we have this week, where we have experienced both, basically. We had come to our own conclusion that it's time to talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold, his new area of the pitch in which he's operating at Liverpool, and a new tactical setup. And at the same time as we realised that, Simon Vincent wrote in as well and said, I'd love it if you could do a pod explaining Liverpool's new formation for me. Now that TAA is in midfield, they clearly don't play 4-3-3 anymore. But what is it? Please explain. What is the new look Liverpool that's won six league games in a row?
Yeah, it's a good question in terms of the formation. Obviously, Trent Alexander-Arnold is drifting inside to play in midfield. I suppose a little bit like the way that various Manchester City fullbacks have done so, or Zinchenko now, who is at Arsenal. But in terms of the formation, I don't know what to call it, because, I mean, I must admit, I only saw highlights of this game at the weekend when they defeated Brentford 1-0. But Cody Gakpo appeared to be playing in more of a midfield role. They played four attackers. And of course, that's one of the things that I suppose you can do if you've got a fullback coming into midfield. One of the players from midfield can vacate that position and push forward. That's, for example, why Ilkay Gundogan had such a good goal-scoring campaign when City started doing that with João Cancelo. So, yeah, I don't know what you call it. I guess it's a kind of a box midfield, kind of 3-2-2-3, which is the way that Manchester City are playing now. Someone on Twitter asked me to start calling that a WM formation.
Mm-hmm. Having that?
I mean, it is. It's pretty much the same shape. The only thing is, I think it confuses people in the sense that the WM is the top and then the bottom, isn't it? It's the attack and then the defence, which is the opposite way around. We'd usually work from defence to attack. So for WM, that's fine. But for the other formations at that time, WW or whatever,
it becomes
a bit confusing.
You can see why they switched from letters to numbers, can't you, in the big shift. I mean, as a kid, you would look back at, or I would, sums me up as a child maybe, that, but look back at those, you know, pre-war formations and think, well, how did that even work? I couldn't even get my head around how that could work. And I'd think, well, that would never happen again, because clearly, you know, a back four or a back five is forever. And it is pretty mad that we've now gone back to that. And it's it just shows that we know that football's cyclical, but sometimes these cycles can be, you know, almost a century long.
Well, and I kind of feel like, having gone from letters to numbers, the next leap, which has happened relatively recently, is going from, well, we have to say in and out of possession, really. You almost have to have two sets of numbers, right? So mark, you know, three, box three potentially, but not all the time and not in both phases of the game.
Yeah, we have to nod to Liam, because Liam loves saying a three, box three, especially with his Brighton hat on. But yeah, I think it's Liverpool have been quite different out of possession this season. More generally, they've started more 4-3-3 out of possession, but there's quite a long period around the winter time where they just completely dropped their press to more of a mid block, and they became more of a 4-4-2 out of possession. And they've kind of changed throughout. So whether it is in or out of possession, Duncan and I were speaking about this earlier, actually, in terms of you look at kind of how a team plays on a season by season basis, rather than actually look at the nuances in and out of possession and during different parts of the season. And Liverpool have basically been tweaking and changing in and out of possession in an attempt to try and stop their main weakness, which at the moment has been just preventing counterattacks, because they've just been counterattacked on so many times. So yeah, there's been tweaks in and out of possession throughout, and this is the latest one.
And when exactly did Trent start playing inside, for want of a better phrase?
It was against Arsenal. I actually had something that week. I was really eager to say that Liverpool need to change something, and I pitched an idea to my editor to say that they need to change potentially to a 3-5-2, and I can go into more detail on that in a bit, because I did end up writing that piece. But on that weekend, just as I was starting to write it, they did change to this system against Arsenal, and it worked to a certain degree in that game, for reasons that we can come on to, as well as Trent being really strong. It freed up Mo Salah quite a lot. I think he had the most shots, I think, of his Liverpool career in the Premier League off the back of that game. So it freed Salah up really well, but there were still a few teething issues in just how much Liverpool, again, was still getting countered upon. And I still think that that is their main weakness, even with Trent. Yeah, ever since that Arsenal game, they've looked to move him inside.
Arsenal being the opponents could be significant in that they, for a lot of this season, have had Zinchenko, their left back, coming inside in a similar way.
Yeah, and in that game, they did it more permanently than I could remember. I mean, Zinchenko didn't really go back to left back. It was always Gabriel, the left-sided centre back on paper, who was moving out with Salah often really far to the touchline. So the two sides were doing it down the same bit of the pitch. So there was all sorts of things going on. It did look promising from an early stage. I thought as well, like you say, it kind of just released Salah. I mean, when we first saw Guardiola doing it with Bayern, my instinct wasn't initially that he was trying to prevent counterattacks, although I think that probably was the thinking. I thought the idea was basically to get Robin and Ribery in space because it takes a player away and it means they just have to flank to themselves. I think in that game, Salah was just receiving the ball, okay, quite a long way from goal, but he was receiving it in space, isolating a player, on that occasion a centre-back, way out of the zone where he wanted to be. So I thought it was quite effective in a couple of ways.
I think we also have to remember the position Liverpool were in going into that Arsenal game when they were really in a, you know, pretty sorry state. The league position was bad. I mean, obviously they came back to draw that game. They should have won it, really. And they've won every game since, but the last five of which have been by a single goal, which is, you know, that could have easily been a run of three, four draws, things like that. So I think, as Mark was saying, I think it is important for teams to experiment and kind of rebuild mid-season a lot of the time. But this was a kind of, Liverpool got to the point where they could do it because the season was essentially over. They've, this idea that, or this possibility of actually finishing fourth has kind of come out of nowhere, really. And how much you can attribute it to the changes. Obviously, they have helped a bit, but I think it has been quite a fortunate kind of month or so for them.
I think one final thing on Trent coming inside as well is that this is a notable one of it being more of a three-box-three, but I know that you've written about this before, Michael, in terms of Trent came inside quite a lot more from advanced areas from right back in seasons gone by, particularly last season. So while he has, when we said, when did he start coming inside? Notably in this instance, it's Arsenal, but he was doing it a lot more in the sort of the right half space in attacking phases quite a lot last season. But now this is kind of more in the build-up phase. So it's kind of worth nodding to the fact that he was coming inside a little bit last season.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. They've done that really well. The rotations down the right flank, and they've often had Henderson in that right centre role, who's obviously really comfortable going out to the flank. So, yeah, he's always shown an element of that to his game. It's just, I suppose it's happening on a more permanent basis. It's a bit more of a structural thing rather than just an in-game rotation thing.
Well, are you surprised that it's taken this long to try this? Because we've been talking about inverted fullbacks and the reasons for it and the main purveyors of it for over a year now for a lot of Liverpool's rivals at the very top of the game. And so I know that Robertson on the other side has had a few occasions of doing this sort of thing, but are you surprised it took Klopp this long to unleash Trent in this inside role?
A little bit. I mean, it's been quite a common topic of conversation whether he should play in midfield permanently, which I still think would be another step compared to this. But the funny thing is, I can't really remember anyone suggesting this. I mean, it does seem quite obvious now. I'm sure someone somewhere has suggested it, but I suppose it just seemed quite a
monkey
specific
with a typewriter
thing.
Probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's Twitter for you, isn't it, basically? But I guess the reason why we didn't really consider it was it seemed quite a specific thing for Guardiola's type of football, and that is so based around kind of specific positional demands. And Klopp is a little bit more kind of freeform in what he wants his players to do. So, yeah, I didn't consider it, but it does make a lot of sense. Obviously, he's got the qualities for it. He's got the history of playing in central midfield. And I think just as well, when things aren't going well, it does just help to freshen things up. I mean, I know that's a really vague thing to say, but I remember at Liverpool, going back 10 years ago now, there was a period where Stuart Downing was really struggling for Liverpool, and also Jose Enrique was really struggling, and Brendan Rodgers ended up just playing them the other way around. He played Downing at left back and Jose Enrique on the left, and both just seemed to kind of perk up, and just doing something different kind of just seemed to improve the team a little bit. So,
like moving your sofa to the other side of the room.
A little bit. Not sure which one would be the sofa there, probably Jose Enrique, but yeah, no, that's a good comparison.
You know, everyone knew that Trent was a midfielder as a young player, but they couldn't imagine the situation where it would work. I think, you know, that like the 3-box-3, no one kind of saw that coming, and essentially now it kind of fits. But it does feel like, Mark and I were saying this earlier, compared to some others in that position, because it's Trent and because he's playing for Liverpool and because he's a very sort of, you know, striking player, it almost feels a little bit more defined in some ways. Like, he is almost like a quarterback in a very sort of, like, you spot him maybe in that role a bit more than you do, say, someone like John Stones, who seems to kind of do it. I mean, in the commentary on for the Real Madrid game this week, he was clearly playing in that position, but no one in commentary ever mentioned it. They kept saying stuff like, oh, John Stones is quite far forward. It's like, yeah, he is. That's where he's playing. So, but I think when, if that's Trent, I think it really stands out a bit more.
I think another reason that it has been tried, to both of the guys' point, is because the plan A hasn't worked very well at all this season in terms of Liverpool's play and style is based on high intense, winning the ball back in the final third quite a lot. And then because that hasn't happened quite a lot, Trent and the defence have been so exposed. So it's an attempt to try and stop that and plug that. But I think that this isn't going to be, in my opinion, something that Liverpool are going to do as a stylistic plan going forward for next season. I think at the moment it's very much to plug gaps and try and get through to the end of the season, and doing it well by the looks of it. You know, in recent weeks they have been unbeaten. I think that Liverpool's run in has been quite favourable in order to implement this style and give it a try. Whereas if they were coming up against teams who would pretty much pick them off with a highly transitional style that's super effective as well, I don't think Liverpool would have A, implemented it quite as consistently, and B, implement it to quite the same effect. So I even looked into the numbers on this as well, and I looked at 538's team strength model. And at the start of this, after the Arsenal game, Liverpool had, I think they were in the top three for the easiest run-ins when it's weighted by home and away fixtures as well. So it was quite clear that Liverpool had a favourable run-in, which is why they're climbing up the table as well, to be able to give this a try. So I think that's another reason to answer your question of why has it taken them this long to try. It's because they've almost had a, not a free hit, but given where they are on the table as well, they're able to actually give it a go rather than too much being on the line.
Okay, well, bigger tests to come, I guess. In terms of, I'm going to ask you about how much of a difference it's made to Liverpool's defending, particularly defending in moments of transition in just a minute. But in terms of the on-ball stats, the underlying numbers, if you like, has Trent's new role chucked up any obvious changes, additions, or improvements in terms of what he's doing with the ball in the inside role compared to the outside role?
Well, yeah, I looked into the numbers. There's been only two occasions where he's registered more than one expected assist this season, and they've come within the most recent five games. I'm going to caveat this with, I'm going to talk about assists, which we know is skewed by outcome bias, but still, I think it's interesting. Five assists in his last seven games, and he's had only three for the remaining Premier League games all season.
Are they looking different to the assists and the chances he was creating from the other role? Is he crossing it or playing those passes from notably different areas?
Yeah, this is the thing. So there was the pass for the assist for Darwin Núñez against Leeds, sort of the punch into Cody Gakpo against West Ham, which were both from far more central areas, which obviously goes with the fact that he's occupying those positions more. But they were either lofted balls where he's got the eye to play those balls over the top against a defence that's pushing up ever so slightly, or if there's just gaps between the midfield and the defensive line, he's able to punch those balls into Gakpo dropping off, or Jota, whoever it might be, just dropping in a little bit. So those assists have come from more central areas, but there have also been his sort of typical half space or even at times still wide crossing. He's obviously going to be reduced in the volume of crosses because he's in more central areas, but he has still created chances that way as well.
And yeah, there was an assist for Gakpo, the first goal against Leeds, that was kind of a cross, really. He kind of got towards the byline and just played it across for an open goal. So yeah, he knows how to do both, clearly.
There's one pass, I think it was in the Arsenal game, outside of the right boot through to Salah. But he also has got these, you know, passes with his instep where his judgment of the spin and the flight of the ball to get it over the top of a defence, but not too far that it goes into the goalkeeper's arms. I mean, his kind of goes without saying, but we're talking about Trent. So let's celebrate it. His judgment of weight of pass is absolutely sensational.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the best passes I've ever seen, I think. And I think that's been overlooked or played down recently because there's been such this sort of cacophony of people saying, but what about his defending? What about his defending? And now he's in a situation where that's less of an issue. And I know, to Mark's point about assists being a, you know, a slightly, got to be a bit aware of them as a stat, but he's level Leighton Baines now in the Premier League history, which is obviously, that was the high watermark for defenders for a long time. He's now sort of basically on the cusp of a huge cluster of big names. So one more assist and he goes level with Salah, with Mesut Ozil, with Juan Mata, with Eden Hazard, you know, and he's still in his, still not 25. And, you know, he really, we've talked a lot this season, obviously, about Harry Kane catching Alan Shearer. Well, Ryan Giggs's 161 record is probably within his grasp, I would say.
There was a good article about this shift on the Anfield Wrap site by a writer called Harriet Pryor. And one of the points there was that the game against Leeds, Alexander-Arnold made more passes in that game than in any other game he's played. And that's 195 Premier League games. So just getting him on the ball more, you know, even before we look at what positions it is obviously a massive factor.
And it is fair to point out that this season, his expected assist numbers have been a lot higher than his actual assist numbers, right? That hasn't always been the case for him. But to Mark's point, assists is noisy and sometimes not the greatest measure of the actual creativity of a player because it relies on the strikers, the forwards finishing their chances. And he's been a bit hard done by this season by that front line.
Yeah, his expected assists have kind of tracked as it has for most of his seasons as a footballer, to be honest. I mean, you know, we all know the issues Liverpool have had up front and that has obviously had an impact. And I guess it's possibly related that it's improved once he's changed position, but it, you know, you could equally argue that it might have improved anyway, given the chances he was creating from his old position.
Actually, just looking at that, per 90, his expected assists. So it's 0.34 expected assists per 90. Other than last season, that's higher than the 2020-21, 19-20 and 18-19 season. So it shows just how he is still being super creative. I think that he was a little bit hard done by the finishing quality of others earlier this season. So his underlying numbers still look strong.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about a very important part of this, and it's the less positive part of this. Trent's defensive ability, his defensive appetite, has been massively questioned for quite some time now. It was considered a huge issue for Liverpool, particularly at the start of the season, as was their issues with maintaining their shape and with defending the counter-attack properly and well. So in the last few weeks, this run of six wins, this slight change of how Trent's playing in possession, does it look like it's improving the team on that front?
I don't personally. I think that there's been quite a few occasions where Liverpool have been caught out. Some of the goals, even. I mean, even looking at the offside chance against Brentford, that obviously wasn't a goal, but they were played through so easily from having that high line and still not being able to press super high. That there's the gaps between the fullbacks and the centre backs, and between the two centre backs, are still far too wide. And in particular, even when Trent has been in that position to try and shut down the counter-attack in more central areas. I think two of the goals that they conceded against Spurs, so there was the Perisic run down that left side, that channel, which led to the first goal for Harry Kane. There was the Son goal that was also down Trent's side as well, down Liverpool's right. A chance that was really well saved. Willian for Fulham at Anfield got down that left-hand side as well. So the counter-attacks are still going down the side that Trent's on. And the fact that Konate is being asked to go from centre-back right towards the touchline to defend 1v1 and be that defender who goes out and tries to shut down the winger is good, because he's very strong in that area, stronger than Trent, but there's still gaps that have a knock-on effect. So it's often a domino effect, and I still think that the gaps are too wide, simply. And my suggestion of a 3-5-2, I still stand by for that reason, to plug those gaps. But again, this feels very makeshift for now, because there's still getting counter-attacked on.
Yeah, I think the role of the right side of centre-back is quite important. And our writer Andy Jones has done a good piece on that. I mean, sometimes it's been Konate out there. Often, you know, in that Arsenal game, he was the one who was facing up to Martinelli. Obviously, he's got the pace to cover that channel. But there's also a big role in possession as well. They have to cover that space. They have to, you know, a big part of it is progressing the ball. I think Matip, obviously, for me, is a much better player in that sense. So, yeah, there's a few little changes. I mean, sometimes it's Henderson as well. If he's on the right of the midfield three, sometimes he's the one who has to go back and cover and fill in at right back. And at times, if it's Konate or the right side centre back, then Alexander Arnold has to drop into the centre of defence, which always looks a little bit weird. And obviously, Alexander Arnold probably weaker than the other players defensively who we talk about playing this role. So it is quite an awkward defensive transition. And I think actually, I mean, this is a separate topic, but I think even on the other side, like Robertson, that game against Tottenham, Liverpool were cruising until Robertson made a couple of mistakes and, you know, gave Spurs a bit of encouragement. It's still just, I think, organisational and individual issues in the way that they defend.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think Robertson's had his strongest season for Liverpool. But the other thing on the right side is that Konate's style is very much to be a proactive defender. So he likes to jump forward. He likes to get involved sometimes just before the pass is being made rather than necessarily start to retreat. Mm. And that leaves another gap. Yeah. So there's more than you can see him so often. There's so many occasions if you watch Liverpool's chances conceded where Konate is behind the ball and just absolutely haring back to try and get back in the defensive line. And it's Van Dijk on his own just trying to jockey and slow down the play. Now, that doesn't seem to be a team that's in control. So even since these changes, that hasn't really changed. So the problems, I think, are still there.
And when you think, you know, most of the left-sided forwards who are the ones running into space or carrying the ball in these situations are among the best ball carriers and skilled players in the whole world as well. So it's not an easy job for that right-sided centre-back. It strikes me that almost the positional role where this becomes most awkward for, I guess, or most specific for, is the right-sided central midfield role. I sort of feel like that's been a bit of an issue all season for Liverpool, partly in terms of personnel, who's been available and fit, and then also in terms of the role and executing it, the different ways in which they are helping or not helping the team. You kind of have to work backwards because you're always going to have Mo Salah on the right side of the front three. With Trent, whether he's in his old role or his new role, he's going to be the right back. So it is quite an awkward one for the right-sided central midfielder. If Trent's coming inside, you have to find space in possession, probably off the ball, that isn't going to squeeze Salah and his space. And out of possession, well, if Trent's infield, you're going to have to cover that right-sided zone. It's quite an unusual right-sided centre midfield role.
Yeah, I think depending on the opponent, I think it would maybe be a little bit more horses for courses. So I think if it was against a deep block where Liverpool were dominating the play and you want someone in the top of that box who's a bit of a free eight, if you like, I think that would suit Harvey Elliott more than we spoke before about Harvey Elliott's, I think, defensive deficiencies. He's just not, at the moment, sort of he's not durable enough to be able to get up and down quite as much. And I think that against deeper blocks, Harvey Elliott in those intricate spaces, those tight spaces, could be really effective. But against a side where you need to plug the gaps for Trent a little bit more, I think then Henderson would be far more suited. And as Michael said, he's been doing that for multiple seasons now, of just knowing when to pull wide and get back. So I do think Harvey Elliott could be one who benefits from this against sort of weaker sides, quote unquote weaker sides, to be able to sort of find his own and not have as much defensive responsibility, because that has been where his downfall has been, because we know how good he is on the ball.
Yeah, and if the right side of centre back is pushing out wide, they're usually not in a good position to counter press as well, which is such a big part of Liverpool's game. And maybe we should reference that as well in terms of why Alexander Arnold hasn't played there before. I mean, Klopp hasn't generally used a real playmaker in midfield. We've talked about Liverpool's midfield being kind of workmanlike and dogged and, you know, basically being the functional part of the side. And you don't want Alexander Arnold just being a runner. So I think that's part of the reason Klopp has been reluctant to use him there. But yeah, there are knock-on effects with this. And I agree with Mark. I don't think the defensive side of the game has got much better since he shifted there.
I was wondering whether you guys think there's a chance that if Klopp wanted to keep broadly a 4-3-3 shape next season, whether this experiment might encourage him to move Trent into the right-sided central midfield role and keep Salah on the right of the attack and then have a more regulation right-back, if you like, which, in my basic understanding, might help with some of the defensive issues caused while still allowing Alexander-Arnold and Salah to cook, as they say.
This could be a shift towards that. I do think it comes with difficulties, though. I mean, I think the fact that he's doing it at the moment means he kind of pops up unannounced in that central midfield zone. He's not generally going to be pressed by an opposition central midfielder. It might be an opposition left winger following him inside. But he's often like the spare man. He's often like the fourth central midfielder. The opposition have got three, Liverpool got three, and he's, you know, the one finding space. So maybe, but I think he would be receiving the ball in slightly different situations and it would be a different challenge. But if he can do this role well, like he is, and the defensive transition is a bit of an issue, then yeah, it's probably worth trying.
He's still kind of coming on to the ball. He's still got the play in front of him, to Michael's point. And I know that other people have used this maybe cliched phrase, but if he did have his back to goal, how would he fare then if he was more of the right-sided number eight? But for all the reasons that we spoke about already, the fact that he's got the game in front of him, he's able to pick that pass over the top or thread it through, that's still kind of the same as his role as right back. If he were to play a little bit more advanced as well, would he fare the same? I don't know.
Let's just move to the other side. What's happening on the left-hand side for Liverpool? Teams so rarely do the same on both sides of the pitch these days. Robertson, the left back, of course. But in recent weeks, quite a few minutes for Curtis Jones in the left-sided central midfield position. And Luis Diaz back from injury as well, often taking a spot on the left side of the attack. It feels like that, again, is an area of the pitch that still needs to be worked out who can fulfil that role best for the players available, Nunez and Gakpo, etc. So what's happening down that left side at the moment, Mark?
Yeah, I think Curtis Jones has done pretty well on that side. He's come into a bit of form. He's had his injury issues. He's very strong offensively. And I think on both sides, Liverpool, we've spoken about it before with Liverpool's triangles. We spoke about it on the right-hand side with Henderson, Salah and Trent. But Curtis Jones is really good at drifting over to that left-hand side, and he's played as a wide player for Liverpool in the academy as well, so he's comfortable on sort of towards the touchline, being able to link and have those triangles from an offensive perspective. But I think Klopp said as much, it's underrated just how strong he is out of possession as well. He's quite defensively aware and he plugs gaps really well as well. So while he does have a sort of tendency to start in more attacking positions and start higher up the pitch to overload in certain areas, he is a real asset when he's fit and firing out of possession as well, which is why I think he's stayed in the team for the past few weeks, really.
And Michael, the wide forward positions on the right and the left side, is there anything linked to the change that's been made in the last few weeks that may change the role of those wide forwards? So Salah, Luis Diaz.
Yeah, like I say, I think Salah often has been coming deeper to receive the ball. And I know at the start of the season, that was a bit of a controversial thing, this idea that, you know, they'd moved their main goal scorer away from goal scoring positions. But I mean, he scored in his last nine at Anfield, I think.
Set a record.
Which is a pretty good return. And if you look at the goal at the weekend against Brentford, I know it was actually the second phase of a set piece. But in that move, he gets the ball out on the right. He plays it back to Fabinho. Fabinho drifts it over to Van Dijk, who plays it across for Salah to get into a goal-scoring position. And I mean, Salah's never been a centre-forward, really. He's been a player that arrives in the box. So I don't think it's that much of an issue. I mean, Liverpool haven't been progressing the ball very well at times. And one way to progress the ball is just getting probably your best dribbler on the ball in space against a left-back who's in a position he doesn't want to be in. So yeah, as long as there's fluidity, it can work. And also, Liverpool have more goal scorers now. I mean, they've got so many forwards. You know, there's been times when it was basically just Salah and Mane, and Firmino wasn't really contributing much in terms of goals. But Jota's back. Nunez is back in the side. Gakpo, I think, has been excellent the last month or so after a bit of a slow start. So it doesn't have to just be Salah scoring the goals.
I think Nunez is the one, if you picked a player that's probably suffered from this change, I think, or might suffer going forward. I mean, he was playing on the left quite a lot, but he's been playing centrally the last couple of games. But he's had a total of eight touches in the box, which, you go back to the start of the season, he's regularly getting sort of into double figures. His shots per 90 figures are ridiculous, but that he seems to be a little bit more curtailed in this system. Now, I know that there's obviously lots of talk about him being a work in progress and he needs to, you know, learn English better, don't we all? but even so, I think if you look at that squad, Nat does feel like he might be the one that loses out next season if they do persist with us.
Well, he's underperformed his XG more than anyone else in the Liverpool squad, but he also has the highest XG per 90 of anyone in the Liverpool squad. So in terms of underlying numbers and thinking for next season, you think that would be positive. I think it's important to speak about Liverpool's front line from a defensive perspective as well, because they have got so many goals within the side. But I think that's been one of their main downfalls, and there's been so much rotation in the front line, in the Mane, the Firmino and Salah front three was so well attuned out of possession as well as obviously scoring for fun, that that's been another key reason why Liverpool have been counterattacked so often, because the front line hasn't quite known where each other are, and there's the difference between a couple of yards has been huge, and then it has that domino effect that then the midfield is exposed, defence is exposed, etc., that it's starting to actually come together from a out of possession perspective as well. And I didn't know that I felt so strongly about out of possession, maybe because Liam's away, maybe I'm thinking more tactically, but I do think it's really important, because the more that they kind of have more time on the pitch together, the more Liverpool can press from the front, win the ball high up in the attacking third, and do what a typical Jurgen Klopp side would do, which is then counter press and score quickly after that.
I must admit, when we decided to do this topic, Mark, I knew that you'd bring a lot to it, but I also thought that you'd be really excited, maybe getting a little bit carried away. Six wins in a row can do that to a fan, and maybe you'd be excited about this brave new world. Yet to finish, I wanted to ask if you see this as being the future for Liverpool, maybe heading into next season, the main tactical approach. Feels like you're seeing more red flags maybe than I expected.
Yeah, I think so. I just think it's a good plan B for now. It's a good time to test it out, as I say, maybe because they had a favourable run in. But I think that Liverpool have been too predictable, or were too predictable at the start of the season. Everyone knew how they were going to play. I think Ancelotti said after the Champions League game that we knew exactly how Liverpool were going to play, so we could play around them very easily. I think as much as anything, it's a real strength that they're thinking of a different way to play. I still have my thoughts of maybe moving to a 3-5-2 at some point as well. And I know I'm probably flogging that a little bit too much. But I do think that the fact that they're looking to play a different way is a strength. Whether or not that will be how they look to play next season, I think is a different question. But we shall see.
I mean, I think it's interesting, you look at Liverpool's last three fixtures. They've got Leicester away on a Monday. You'd imagine they'll have a lot of the ball and create a lot of chances in that game. And Southampton away on the last day as well, which is similar. But Villa at home in the last home game of the season, like Unai Emery, you feel like he's a man that will have been watching developments recently and will definitely be thinking of a plan. So I think that's a really fascinating game next weekend to see how that turns out.
Michael, are you optimistic, a bit more optimistic than Mark with where Liverpool are at finishing the season and what it could mean heading into the summer and beyond?
Yeah, I suppose I am. I suppose I'm a little bit more optimistic. I mean, it's interesting, you know, you mentioned, could this become a permanent thing for next season? I mean, Liverpool don't really have another right back. The backup really for him is James Milner, who is not going to be there next season, I gather. The only other player who's played there in the Premier League this season has been Joe Gomez, who's obviously not a right back. I just don't think he's got the qualities to play there, really. So I wonder whether they will look to bring someone in, not necessarily just because of this shift, but just because sometimes Alexander-Arnold has needed a rest. You know, on the left, they've got Tsimikas, but they don't have an equivalent on the right.
They've got Calvin Ramsey, who hasn't really played much at all this season. I think he's had his injury issues. But as much as anything, we're talking about maybe Trent moving into midfield. It's worth noting that Liverpool are going to lose four central midfielders this summer. So Milner out of contract, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita out of contract, and Artur Melo's loan is going to be up as well. Trent. So they need, as well as that went. 13 minutes, I think, in total for Liverpool. But they need to have reinforcements. It's going to be, you know, a big summer for Liverpool. We know that. But the fact that they need to get bodies and high quality bodies in the door for central midfielders is also just important to note as much as anything, whether or not Trent continues within this sort of midfield role.
Let's widen it for England. For Trent and England, it's not been an easy relationship over the last few years. Does this have any England significance, Duncan?
I wouldn't think so under the current regime. We've got basically a year left of the current regime, give or take a month or two. I think what happens after that could be quite significant. I think the new England manager, whoever that is, could look to build around Trent. I think that might be a thing to do, but I don't see Gareth Southgate doing that in the short term.
I mean, it's interesting because Stones and Alexander-Arnold are both doing roughly similar thing, playing as a halfback, I guess I would call it. But international football is so different from club football, and you just don't have the time to work on these things. Southgate has not really been a very adventurous manager tactically, I think it's fair to say. So, I can't really see that being a major factor unless he does it on a more permanent basis next season with the proper right back, as you say, Ali.
Any last bits and bobs before we say goodbye?
Well, given we're talking about Trent, I thought it was we should bring up probably my favourite ever Michael Cox tweet, and there have been a few, from October this season when he pointed out ahead of Liverpool's game at Forest that it was the first time a Premier League player had played next to a river that shares his name since Don Hutchinson for Everton away at Sheffield Wednesday back in September 1999. I mean, hats off, to be honest. Great river content.
And yeah, he only came on as a sub in that game. It was one of the games that Milner played at right back.
But... Were you worried?
Well, I did the tweet in the week just in case, because I think he was an injury doubt. So I got it in early. I also wondered that someone like you would come up with something similar, to be honest. But I do remember, I actually remember where I came up with that tweet. It was the day after England, Sweden in the Women Euros, which was in Sheffield. And I was walking beside the Don and I thought, ooh, that could be interesting. And then, of course, the fixtures had been released. So I wrote it down in my diary, wow. Sadly enough.
I mean,
made it topical.
I could sneer, but that would be a very glass house. I mean, that was my response to you. Really interesting tweet. Like it. The man with the angry face covered by a fake happy face. So, yeah, good job all around.
It's a battleground that a lot of people won't realize even existed before this conversation. But the likes of Michael and Duncan, I'm going to throw Adam, Harry, football cliches into the mix as well. The sort of race to get these whimsical or... observational or historic or pithy or whatever it might be tweets out first is it's actually a huge battleground a lot of people don't know about. And
I'm not sure it is a battleground. I sent Adam a funny thing the other day that he then tweeted because I didn't think it was my
sharing actually.
Yeah,
I think all three of us have shared stuff thinking it's more suitable for the other person. So
the insight is worse. It was incredible.
But to be fair, that river tweet, there were some fantastic responses that didn't quite prove the tweet wrong, but I didn't know that there was a River Douglas that flowed just past Wigan's ground. Someone suggested a Douglas Mycon. You know, that was his first name. There was a bit of a shout for obviously the River Lee flows close to London Stadium, mm-hmm. but it's a specific spelling.
Yeah.
I wasn't having any of that.
I mean, I should point out, if your child is called Thames and they're good at football, then give Fulham Academy a ring and get him involved, because he could be making history at some point in the next 5 years.
I'm sure we could stretch this out to a whole podcast, maybe in the summer when we're looking for things to talk about. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Really interesting topic. So thank you also to Simon, who sent in that question. We see all of your suggestions. We massively appreciate them. They get our juices flowing. And in many cases, as this week, we will run them on the pod. So please do keep sending them in. We may not get as much audience interaction as at the Football Clichés podcast, but we very much appreciate what we do get. So thank you for that, Simon. And we'll be back again next week on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. One big happy family, as it turns out, between Adam and Duncan and Michael. You can read all of the stuff on the Athletic site. So make sure you sign up today, theathletic.com/tactics, the best place to go to get the current best offer on an annual subscription. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk again next week.
The Athletic.